This is Positively Revolting Talk, and I'm Melinda Bernert. I'm sitting in for Ani, who's taking a well-deserved break today. We're talking about politics, taxes, soccer, and how with a little public dissension, we may be able to stop the money hemorrhaging brought on by Timbers owner Merritt Paulson and his pals Mayor Sam Adams and Commissioner Randy Leonard. Someone once said that in soccer, the more time you have, the more mistakes you will make. And this seems to be a truism for Paulson and his Major League Soccer franchise supporters. With every press conference, this deal with millionaire Paulson, son of former Treasury Secretary Hank Paulson, seems to become more costly for taxpayers. You'll recall that Paulson approached the city of Portland with a deal. He'd buy a Major League Soccer franchise for $35 million, and he'd bring his new toy to town to play with us. All we taxpayers have to do is fund a complete remodel of PGE Park. And that's a cinch, right? After all, we just remodeled PGE Park 8 years ago. By the way, we still owe $27 million on that facelift. All this renovation will leave the Beavers without a stadium. So the next step in the plan is to build the Beavs a new place to call home. Originally, this was to be in the Lentz District, but now Paulson and the city have their eye on a spot in the Rose Quarter. And what's the bill for all this remodeling, you ask? Roughly $85 million. And how will this be funded? Well, by selling bonds, of course, because the city of Portland has no money. But don't worry, the entire bill won't be funded from just Portland residents. Hank Paulson's PR guy is pushing through a House bill that would allow income taxes from soccer players and soccer executives to be diverted from those silly mundane projects such as schools, roads, fire and police to paying off the soccer debt. But no, you know, this is Portland, right? No problem. We are the model of transparency and public input, right? Well, not in this case. It seems that the mayor has forgotten to include the public in the decision-making process. My guest this morning is Jules Boykoff. Jules is a former professional soccer player and is currently an assistant professor of politics and government at Pacific University. Jules has written extensively on the suppression of dissent in the American landscape, and he joins us now from Forest Grove. Good morning.
Good morning.
Jules, one of the cornerstones of democracy is discourse and dissent, and it seems to be a vital missing element in the soccer deal. Is it too late for the people of the city to have a voice in this project?
Absolutely not. I mean, this deal is not sealed yet, and there are many steps along the road here before it becomes finalized, including some upcoming city council meetings that people can attend, an important one coming up on the 22nd here of April, very soon, that will discuss the deal and this pre-development agreement that maybe we'll get a chance to talk about later. I would also say that, you know, I really commend the Timbers Army, who are basically the fans, some might say fanatics, of the Portland Timbers soccer team, because they have actually taken their feet to the streets and they've led marches, they've showed up at the city council meetings, they've put pressure on the members of city council, and so in a way they've exerted their democratic freedoms in a way that maybe the rest of us could learn from.
Very good point. Now, let's talk a little bit about the actual soccer field. As a former professional soccer player, my question for you is, one of the biggest costs is remodeling PGE Park to fit what they're claiming is Major League Soccer standards. Mm-hmm. And it was my understanding that they outfitted PGE Park for the women's was it the Women's Professional Soccer League in 2003? I believe there was a tournament. And I understand there are other stadiums throughout the country that are similar, that do share with other sports. Is this something we absolutely have to do?
Well, the Major League Soccer is demanding, as part of their economic development plan, that all the teams in the league, in fact, have soccer-specific stadiums. So your question really can be played out a couple different ways. To actually play a soccer match, well, no, you don't necessarily need a soccer-specific stadium. I mean, look, the Portland Timbers have been successfully sharing a park with the Portland Beavers for a long time. It can definitely happen. Is it optimal for an actual soccer pitch? No, it's not really. Having those baseball diamond, the base paths and whatnot out there and the dirt areas for the bases, it's not ideal, but it can happen. But the other path to think about is the MLS is demanding this as sort of a prerequisite to having a successful league. And I actually think, you know, the soccer player in me says that it is a good idea to have a soccer-specific stadium if you actually want to have this league be successful. So I agree with Major League Soccer that there should be soccer-specific stadiums. But, you know, whether the taxpayers should have to pay for it, that's a totally different question that I know we're going to talk about a lot today.
Well, my other question for you is just that. You know, soccer is a popular sport. It's up and coming. It's not as popular overall nationally as football and baseball. And I'm a soccer fan. I just want to say that. I'm a soccer fan. My son plays soccer. But I'm having a hard time wrapping my head around these figures, because I believe if we take out roughly, and it's roughly 85, I've heard between 85 and 89 million, that would be taxpayer funded. At 6% interest, that's something, that's like $6,175,000 per year for 30 years. So we'd have to make that back. I mean, that's a lot of money to have to pay back. Plus, according to Sam Adams' website, they're now thinking about funding this through zero coupon bonds, which is generally are 9%, which is even more. And while soccer is very popular and it's a wonderful sport, you know, you need about $10 million, $11 million a year in revenue to make this fly. And I just don't know if the money's there.
Well, those are great questions you're asking. I mean, for years, us soccer fans have been saying that soccer is an up-and-coming sport, and that, you know, one day we're really going to have a league that flourishes. You know, the good thing about Major League Soccer is that they've taken it relatively slow, and they haven't made the mistakes as the old soccer league, the NASL, which also existed in Portland, actually did pretty well in Portland many years ago. What Portland does have is a built-in fan base. And they also, people already know what the Timbers are based on that history with the NASL from the 1970s, as well as the current team, which gets pretty good attendance, actually, really, really top-notch attendance for their actual league. In terms of the funding, and this is really the crux of the matter here, you bring up a really important point about these zero coupon bonds that are being floated now as a possible way of funding the project, because these are very problematic. First of all, there's no guarantee that the city of Portland will be able to secure these bonds, as Jack Bogdansky, professor of Lewis and Clark, has monitored very carefully on his blog. There have been projects in the past, such as trying to fund Multnomah County Courthouse, which haven't qualified as tax exempt. And so if these zero coupon bonds are floated, they're probably going to be at taxable rates. And what these zero coupon bonds really mean, I mean, just to take a step back, is that basically the city wouldn't have to pay anything for like 11 years or so, is what I've been reading in both Willamette Week and Oregonian and elsewhere. And so basically there would be sort of like a free bond, if you will. You still have to get someone to buy it, of course, but a free bond for the city that they wouldn't have to start paying off for 11 years. Does this sound familiar? Yes, it sounds a lot like the whole subprime housing market, actually, which is kind of scary in a lot of ways based on future revenues that we don't know, like you very deftly pointed out. We don't know if they're actually going to materialize.
Well, and as those bonds, as we sit for 11 years, the interest still is accruing. And at the end, there will be something like a balloon payment. And I, as a taxpayer, I just can't believe that this is sound financial advice for anyone to take. And I believe, Jules, that we have a caller this morning. Good morning. You're on the air. Hello. Hi, good morning. Good morning. You're on the air. Okay. I think, hi, Jack?
Yeah, hello.
Good morning.
Could I ask a question about the baseball stadium side of this situation?
Yes, please.
Okay, I'm a retired person on a fixed income, so I follow this with that type of interest. Is, in fact, this proposed so-called AAA baseball stadium indeed phase one of what would eventually be a major league dimension stadium? In other words, suppose they built something at AAA specifications. I'm suspicious that Mr. Paulson et al. Would come back at a future date when the situation was perceived to be favorable and ask for additional funds to increase the capacity to major league specifications. And I'll listen off the air. Thank you.
Well, thank you for that comment. That is one. There have been many scenarios that have been been played out. But that is not one I had thought about. Jules?
I heard the first part of the caller's comment. I didn't hear the last part. But in terms of what the caller is bringing up, a really important point, I mean, what is the deal with the baseball stadium? And that's often getting lost in the discussion about the soccer stadium. And there's a whole bunch of dimensions to talk about with the baseball stadium. One, if we build a AAA-specific stadium, as the caller was mentioning, will this be able to translate later to a Major League Baseball stadium? Or are we just going to be looking at a future of expansion of the stadium, which is exactly what we're looking at with the soccer situation? So, I mean, that's a really good question that the caller brings up. And second of all, there's all sorts of issues with baseball regarding the place where it's going to go. I mean, all indications are that if this all goes through, they're going to tear down Memorial Coliseum and build a baseball-specific stadium there. And there's all sorts of issues that have to be addressed in terms of meeting the needs of veterans, in terms of creating jobs that are living wage jobs for the people that are building the stadium, for the people that ultimately start to work there. And so these are open questions that haven't been totally resolved yet, and that's why we're in this really important period of, you know, democracy, if you will, where you can exert your opinion in the public, not just on today's show, but also to the people who are making these decisions on the city council, and let them know how you'd like this to play out.
And you're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. It's Positively Revolting Talk. And my guest this morning is Jules Boykoff, and we are talking about soccer. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call at 503-231-8187. That's 231-8187. So Jules, let's go back to that point about, you know, the public input in this piece. So far, there has been very limited opportunity for the public. You know, yes, you can send an email, or you can write a letter, but so far there hasn't been any public hearing that I've been aware of.
Well, the City Council has had a few open hearings regarding it, and that's when Timber's Army, I mean, fans of the team, really flooded City Council. Mm-hmm. I mean, there haven't been a bunch of them, but there have been a few, and it's incumbent upon us to figure out when the next big one is. And as I say, the next one that's going to discuss soccer is the 22nd of April. And there are procedures. You can get on the roster of people who get to speak for 3 minutes or less if you sign up the Thursday before. So, I mean, yes, these are fairly limited options, and they're definitely threading through the corridors of power. But, of course, as citizens in a democracy, we have other options at our disposal. We don't have to necessarily just work through the corridors of institutional power. You can also exert your thoughts creatively through dissent in the streets or through art or what have you. I mean, we have lots of options available to us. It's an open field.
And we have a caller. Good morning, Scott. You're on Positively Revolting Talk.
Hi, good morning. I just wanted to make a comment that I used to live on 16th and Everett, and whenever there was a PGE game where anybody, where there were any numbers of fans, there's no parking down there. Mm-hmm. So I can't see investing millions of more dollars into bringing a soccer. I don't even know if there's any kind of a fan base for professional soccer in the first place. And then on top of that, there's no parking up there at PGE Park. So even if it was extremely successful, where are people supposed to park? And I'll take my comments off the air.
Well, Jules, can you answer? There's a fairly strong fan base here. I think we've established that.
I'd like to speak to the question of parking, because
sure.
it splays out in multiple directions. It's a good point. I mean, where are people going to park? What's fortunate about the setup at PGE Park is that you have the MAX that goes right by the stadium. So in a lot of ways, in terms of seeing the bigger picture of dealing with other environmental issues like global warming, having the stadium right there along the tracks can encourage people to use public transportation, which I think is just a good idea in general. But the other point about parking, and the caller, Scott, you're right. I mean, there's not a lot of parking around PGE Park. So not only is it inconvenient for people who come to the games, but it's also getting rid of a possible source of revenue for the Portland Timbers to pay off these bonds. And, you know, getting back to the question of funding, one of the mechanisms of funding that's in place to pay off these bonds for stadium construction over the long haul is something in that we set up called the Spectator Fund. And the Spectator Fund in Portland is based on little ticket taxes that are put on tickets as well as parking revenues. And so if there's no parking revenues at PGE Park, you actually have a decrease in the areas where you can secure funding to pay off these bonds. So it's important in that respect as well. I mean, just for also for people like Scott who live around there, I mean, these are questions about do you want people coming into your neighborhood. But the stadium's there now, and it's been there for a long time, and people in that area have been dealing with that. Not to say it's, like, utterly pleasant and should be dismissed as not a concern, but the parking issue is an important one in terms, but I'm more interested in it in terms of the revenues that it doesn't create that we could use actually to pay off these bonds.
Well, I was looking at going over some of the stories in the Willamette Week and the Oregonian and the city's own information. I just wanted to share some information with our listeners that the city, the whole project is $129 million, and the Paulsons are putting in $35. That would be Merritt and his father, Hank, of the bailout. Bailout Hank, $35 million to buy the franchise. Then they also said that they would put in $12.5 million of cash, and that they would cover any cost overruns, you know, construction cost overruns beyond $2.5 million. Now the city is going to put in $18.5 million from the Oregon Convention Center urban renewal area by once again selling zero coupon bonds, and then they believe that they can come up with $31 million out of that Spectator Facilities Fund that Jules was just talking about. And to get that money, it'd be $17.7 million of zero coupon bonds and $13.9 of traditional bonds, which leaves us with pretty much a funding gap of $27 million. And to get that, they're talking about possibly new taxes on restaurants and bars near PGE Park. And in an economy right now where, you know, everything is down, and you're planning on going to a restaurant, that really might make the difference. It's an extra tax. I believe that that's a burden on those nearby restaurants. Now, someone could argue that, hey, well, you know, they're going to have more business because people are going to come to the Timbers games and they're going to want to eat beforehand. But I don't know. I mean, this is going to be a far-reaching financial burden, in my opinion, if this is the way that they plan on funding this. And we do have another caller on the this morning. Good morning. Welcome to Positively Revolting Talk.
Well, I've got a question about the $35 million to pay to play.
Was yes.
that in any way negotiable? You'd think that maybe the soccer people want another. But anyway, what's the deal about that, and is it refundable?
Well, he got a deal, actually. I believe, and Jules might correct me if I'm wrong, I believe the original cost was $40 million, and they negotiated it down $5 million to the $35 million fee. But that's the Paulsons, you know, that's their thing, because they're owning the team while the city and the PAC taxpayers are continuing to own the stadiums.
Well, the Paulsons could have paid $35 million to build a stadium. Instead, they pay $35 million to whom? For what?
Well, Jules, you want to explain how that works?
Sure. Yeah, we should be wondering where all this money is going. And so the $35 million was the franchise fee that the Paulson family had to pay to Major League Soccer in order to get a franchise. Now, this franchise fee has actually ballooned quite a bit in the recent years, where it was as little as $10 million just a short while ago. And so this is where a lot of the money actually gets made in professional sports, is by owning the franchise and then later selling it for even more money. Even if the teams are operating at a loss, you can still sell the franchise for big bucks. And that's how a lot of the money is made in professional sports. Now, what's interesting, I think, also about this franchise fee, like you said, Melinda, originally it was $40 million that Major League Soccer had set it at, and they basically decreased it down to $35 million. So you'd think right there the Paulson ownership team would have $5 million extra dollars that they originally agreed that they would put into the project that they possibly could use to deal with that gap that you just mentioned a moment ago of about $27 million. But I've seen nothing yet from the Paulsons indicating that they would like to use that $5 million in that way. I mean, I hope that they maybe will eventually offer that $5 million that they save from the franchise fee and plug it in so that we don't have to use taxpayer money for it.
Well, is it refundable if they don't get the franchise, if things don't work out?
Yeah, that's a good question, and I would imagine that if things don't work out, they're not going to have to pay the franchise fee.
Well, haven't they paid it already?
That you'd have to talk to the Paulsons about.
We don't even know that?
I don't know that. The deal, in my mind, is not totally finalized, especially since it's still going through City Council, and the deal has to be worked out by September 1st.
Well, why would we even negotiate if it's possible they won't get the franchise?
No, they've been promised a franchise.
Oh, really?
By MLS, yes. MLS, Major League Soccer, allocated two franchises recently, one to Vancouver in British Columbia and the other to the team here in Portland. So the Paulsons definitely know that they have the franchise if they can work out a deal with the city of Portland to figure out this funding gap. So they've been assured that they're going to be a team. In fact, that actually brings up another really important point in terms of putting pressure on the deal makers in this situation, because the Paulsons know they have the team. Now they really want to work out a deal with the city, which is to say the city is in even better bargaining position, in my opinion, to get a much better deal for the city of Portland.
Right. And in a recent article in the Oregonian, Merritt Paulson was setting the timeline. And he was saying, well, by April 15th, we need to have this agreement. And by August 1st, he is telling basically in the way it was written, and maybe I misunderstood it, he was dictating to the city council the timelines where they would be making the decisions. And that disturbed me a bit.
Well, you know, the Paulsons are in a negotiation situation with the people on city council, and there's all sorts of games that are being played and power plays that are happening. And, you know, he, of course, is trying to push the pace as much as possible, and others are playing mind games as well. I mean, you know, Randy Leonard, the city councilman, has been doing a good job playing tough in terms of some of these negotiations. Hopefully we can talk about that a little bit more. But everyone's playing mind games with each other. And, of course, Paulsons have an interest in pushing the pace, and the city has an interest in not necessarily pushing the pace, but definitely trying to get the deal done here by September 1st.
And can we talk about flooding the market for a minute? The Paulsons definitely have the franchise. And if you could clear something up for me, I know that there's a team in Seattle. Now they're giving a team to Vancouver. But is there also one in Tacoma?
No, there's not.
Okay, so it would be Portland, Seattle, and Vancouver.
Right, and okay. Major League Soccer is thinking, oh, we can recreate this incredible rivalry that's in the Northwest here. All teams have good fan bases, solid ownership, and so they're thinking this could be great if all three teams have teams. Well, that's only going to help the league.
Right.
I think they're probably right, actually.
And we have some callers. Good morning, you're on Positively Revolting Talk.
Yes, hello. Thank you for your energy in this situation. And working again, it sounds like you're working against it. I wanted to see all this money and energy go into people issues that are much more important than this soccer crap. But I'm not going to waste time and energy. I just want to say, which is more important, that I'm sorry to see this sick Paulson toxic energy living in Oregon. I'd like to see the people of Oregon have some real guts and kick it out. And it seems like, too, patriarchy and capitalism are reigning again. And I want this toxic Paulson person, anybody that supports him, out of Oregon and out now before you destroy Oregon. Thank you.
Well, thank you for your call. And let me just say real quickly that to touch on something I spoke about earlier, there is a bill, House Bill 2531, that would allow the income taxes from soccer players and soccer executives to be used to pay off the soccer debt. And, you know, on its face, that doesn't sound like such a bad thing. But recall that we're in a horrible financial position right now, and that I believe it was in January, the state of Oregon took out their own bonds, $255 million of bonds they're trying to sell so that we can keep the state going. So every little bit, it does add up. And I believe we had another caller. Good morning.
Morning, thanks. I want to speak about our loss of flexibility in order to accommodate a really unproven product, which is Major League Soccer. Just a couple weekends ago, PG Park had University of Oregon versus OSU baseball, and it was about 15,000 a game in attendance. And I think the new proposed baseball stadium only has a capacity of 9,000. So, I mean, you know, we would lose a lot of capacity for big-time baseball if those teams wanted to play here again, first of all. And secondly, you know, I used to watch professional football back in the 60s and 70s with the NFL, and a lot of their games were played in baseball stadiums. And they were a well-established league at that time, very well-established, which Major League Soccer is not. So I'm not sure how Major League Soccer, it's kind of unprecedented they demand these soccer-specific stadiums, it seems to me. They should be challenged on that.
Jules?
Yeah, those are both good points in terms of the unproven product. What I will say, you know, in response, definitely there are all sorts of professional teams, and football is a great example, that have played in stadiums that weren't specific to their sport. And so this is just a decision that Major League Soccer has made based on the failures of past leagues, that they want to have it be soccer-specific stadiums. And I think, you know, people are just going to have a friendly disagreement about whether that's absolutely necessary or not. But in terms of the question about Major League Soccer, because this is a really important one, can it succeed monetarily? Overall, the league is not exactly rolling in the money here. And one thing, though, is that three teams have made profits. If you look at Forbes.com, you can see that the teams can actually individually make profits. The three teams from Major League Soccer that made money last go-round was the Los Angeles Galaxy, the team from Toronto, and the team from Dallas. They've all been actually making profits, which takes us to an important question here. I mean, we're talking about funding the Portland Timbers, Portland Beavers through taxpayer funds. And really all the taxpayers are going to get off, if everything works out perfectly, is that we're going to get our bonds paid off over the long haul. But if there any profits go to the Timbers and Beavers, if any profits whatsoever goes to them based on all the taxpayer money that's gone in to fund it, who walks away with the profits? Well, 100% goes to the Paulson ownership team. And that's where I think people need to stand up, actually. There's all sorts of different models that we could put forth to make this more fair of a deal. I mean, actually, you know, Merritt Paulson himself, the majority owner of the Portland Timbers and Portland Beavers, was quoted recently in Willamette Week saying, "I challenge people to find a better deal out there for the city." Well, I actually have a couple ideas. I appreciate you putting down the challenge like that, and I think that Portland's a really creative place, and I think we should try to step up to meet that challenge that Mayor Paulson set out for us. One way is to negotiate right now, have our city council members and Steve Janik, who's the person who's negotiating for the city, have them make it into the contract where if the team starts to make money, profits, the Portland Timbers and Portland Beavers, if the Timbers start to make profits, that the city of Portland will share those profits as soon as they start to stream. In other words, not only are we going to get our bonds paid off over the long haul, that's a no-brainer, that's obvious, we should definitely get that taken care of. But it seems to me that it would be fair, more fair, if the city's going to put all this money in the state, as you're talking about with the state bill on income taxes for the soccer players, if we're going to be putting forth all this money, we deserve to get more. We deserve to get profits commensurate with the amount that we've put in. Merritt Paulson said in the very first task force meeting way back yonder that he wanted to be an innovative owner. Well, this would be a great way to be an innovative owner. Here's another idea. Your caller brought up the notion of National Football League, NFL, and there's a team in the NFL called the Green Bay Packers in Wisconsin who basically are owned by their fans. And four times over the course of their history, they've sold shares. These shares do not pay dividends to the owners. Most recently, I think it was 1977, people could pay $200 to the team. And this is a way of the Packers to get revenues and allow the Packers to stay in the city. And if you bought a $200 share of the Packers, it was basically symbolic, but it's just showing that you support the team and that you appreciate the fact that they're staying in a small market like Green Bay and that, you know, you appreciate the history of the team. You are given for your $200 for your share, a little certificate that you could frame, put on your wall and whatnot. There's no reason why, if Merritt Paulson in fact wants to be this innovative owner that he says he wants to be, and I don't doubt him, why not have the people that really are going to benefit from soccer and really appreciate having it here, why don't we have them pay for non-dividend shares, $200 a pop, give them a certificate. Hey, how about this, Paulson ownership team? Why don't you give them one of those fancy soccer scarves as well? It's like they're doing your marketing for you. So, I mean, there's all sorts of creative ways that we could deal with this. And if you look at Portland history, Portland prides itself on being a creative space, a creative city that's ahead of the curve when it comes to urban growth boundary, when it comes to mass transit. I don't see why we can't be ahead of the curve when it comes to funding the soccer team. I certainly don't want us to be behind the curve, which is to say be engaged in one of these so-called public-private partnerships that all too often means public pays, private profits. And that's kind of what we're looking at here, I'm afraid to say. There's some very good aspects of the deal making that have been going on between the city council, Steve Janik, and the Paulson ownership team. For instance, the fact that the Paulsons have said they'd step up and back the funding and say that with their family money, not Shortstop LLC, Mayor Paulson's company. This is important, and it shouldn't be overlooked, and I think that's a positive step on the road of negotiation. But I think that if we put a little creativity into it and Mayor Paulson's willing to be the innovative owner that he says he is, we could come up with a much better, much more innovative deal that would be much better for the city of Portland and our taxpayers.
Absolutely. And it's 8:31. You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. This is Positively Revolting Talk, and we are talking about soccer this morning. Our guest is Jules Boykoff, former pro soccer player and current assistant professor at Pacific University. And we do have a call. Good morning, Robert.
Hi, good morning. I was hoping your guest could comment on why PGE Park does not qualify for Major League Soccer as it is, because you look at, for example, the Houston MLS team. They play at the University of Houston, which is a very, very old stadium. The Bay Area team plays at Santa Clara University, I believe, which seats about 12,000. So there's a number of teams that are playing in rather old or not designed specifically for soccer facilities. I don't understand why we need to spend all of this money on a new stadium when we actually have soccer functioning at PGE Park. And I'll take your response off the air. Thanks.
Yes, that's a good question. I mean, why does PGE Park have to be soccer specific? And really, what's not soccer specific about it now? For anyone who's been to a Timbers game, you know that it's a totally rambunctious, exciting place to be during matches. You can see well from the seats that are available. But what's not soccer-specific about it now is that it's not the horseshoe shape where you can have fans on at least three sides of the field. The Multnomah Athletic Club's on the fourth side. You're not going to really be able to do too much about that. But you can make a horseshoe shape that will make it soccer-specific. And in terms of the question of teams from other teams in the MLS, everybody's being encouraged to take on a soccer-specific stadium, and all new teams that are entering the league have to provide within a certain time frame a soccer-specific stadium. So that's just the dictates of the league that, again, you know, people are going to have friendly disagreements about whether it's absolutely necessary in terms of these particular economic times, but that's a discussion for people to have with the league.
Let's talk about the private-public partnership that you brought up a moment ago. That $27 million gap, if this was such a good financial deal, I would think that private companies, corporations, Nike, Adidas, would be clamoring to be part of this. Why can't we find private funding for that $27 million? I mean, they're asking taxpayers to go out on a huge limb. And I just might add that we already owe $2 billion. Actually, it's more than $2 billion. The city of Portland has more than $2 billion in unfunded fire and police pensions. So, you know, it's not like we're rolling in the dough. And if we could somehow find, and it's obviously a corporation that, you know, such as Nike or Adidas would a perfect fit, to me that would just be a no-brainer. So I'm wondering, maybe this isn't such a good deal.
Well, a lot of people, many critics of the plan have been saying, yeah, if it's such a great deal, why can't you find other hard-nosed businessmen like the Paulson to kind of step up to the plate, not only to fill the funding gap, but they're going to have to sell these bonds as well. I mean, you know, Paulsons have taken it upon themselves. Again, they should be given a little bit of credit for this. You know, they've taken it upon themselves to go out and find the people to buy the bonds, and they've also said that they're going to go out and try to beat the bushes for private funding. And this is a very well-connected family, obviously, you know, with the father, Henry Paulson, who incidentally is 20% owner of the team. It's not like he's irrelevant to the equation here. Henry Paulson being the former Treasury Secretary and perhaps more importantly, the former CEO of Goldman Sachs. And so, I mean, these people have all sorts of high-powered connections that most Portlanders don't, I'm sure. And so, yes, why aren't private funders stepping up? Well, part of the reason is, you know, you could maybe sort of argue is a why buy the cow when you can get the milk for free phenomenon. I mean, why would you step up and pay money that perhaps the government is going to pay for you? You see what I mean? And part of it is that they're waiting this out. I mean, the Paulsons are, as I say, beating the bushes right now, and they're going to see if they can get a better deal from the city, and it's going to kind of come down to crunch time as we get closer to September. And it's hard to know what the Paulsons have working behind the scenes, but I'm sure they're working furiously trying to bring together people to fund this project.
And we have John on the line. Good morning. Welcome to Positively Revolting Talk.
Good morning. I would like to agree with the lady that was on just a couple of people back, in that Portland doesn't need a white-collar crime syndicate from the East coming out here and telling us what to do with a team. They just need a place to put all that money that they have, tax money that they've already taken from us. So I am really angered at people even listening to this trash. So I'm sorry about this, but I don't want them in town, and I'm not the only one. And there'll be people in the streets over this before it's over. This is crazy. There are people that are needing food, and then you're talking about this craziness and where the money. They can't even tell us where the money went, which is our money, and it's coming here to Portland. You're nuts. So I'm sorry, but I can't agree with any of this.
Well, John, you bring up a very, very good point, a very salient point that many other people agree with you. Hank Paulson, while, yes, he was the Treasury Secretary, it also comes with a certain reputation, and well-deserved, I might add. And there is a certain trust issue involved here. I'm just wondering if this was another family that was pushing this, if this might go down a little bit easier. But once again, a member of the Bush administration who was directly responsible for our financial situation at the moment is now asking for trust from a city that is in a very, very bad financial situation. Jules, do you have a comment on this?
I do. I mean, I think it's really interesting. I mean, your caller has tapped into a serious frustration that's out there in Portland about sort of this notion of outsiders coming in. Merritt Paulson moved to Lake Oswego in 2007, so he hasn't been around all that long in Portland. So, and then there's the history of the Paulson family, their involvement with the Bush administration, Henry Paulson in particular. And the other thing that is rubbing a lot of people wrong is the fact that Henry Paulson, at least before the financial crisis, was worth $700 million. $700 million. And, you know, if the funding gap's $26.8 million, it seems like one obvious place to look would be to Henry Paulson, not because he's Henry Paulson, because he's the former Treasury Secretary, but because he's 20% owner of the team. And so, and he has the money if he wishes to use it in this way. It's there. And this is one question that I feel like could be pushed a little harder in the general media coverage of this question. I mean, you know, that they have money. I mean, when it's brought up, I mean, the recent Oregonian story mentioned, okay, you know, there is this funding gap, and they say to Paulson, you know, your family net worth is in the nine figures. You know, how about you guys stepping up and covering this? And he was quoted in the Oregonian as saying, as they quoted it bluntly, that will not be from me. Well, I want to know, that's fine if that's his opinion, I suppose, but I mean, I want to know, what's the follow-up question to that? I mean, why isn't it going to be you? And why aren't you willing? If you really want to have a team, it seems like you could pitch in the money, I mean, especially since the father does seem to have quite a bit of wealth.
Well, and I had that very same question, because we do have the Portland Tippers here. And Portland I guess what I'm saying is, what are we getting from this team? Yes, he's buying the team, and as you mentioned earlier, he will, once they gain in popularity, he will have the ability to resell it and probably add a profit. So really, what is the city gaining? Well, we're going to gain a revamped stadium, a new stadium, but really, other than tremendous amount of debt, what are we gaining? We do have the Beavers, we do have the Timbers, and I realize that, you know, we are not... But we're also not the population base of Los Angeles, Seattle, Vancouver. So really, to me, my opinion is, he's saying, look, I have this great new shiny toy, and I want you to play with me, but I'm not going to give you any way to do that. You're going to have to fund this whole thing. And right there, that $27 million, as you said, could easily come from him. And you know, I would like that answered a little bit more.
Sure. If I can just say something. Well, if you read the Oregonian and their editorials, they talk a lot about what the city will get in terms of becoming a world-class city. You hear the mayor talk about this quite a bit too. How, you know, the soccer is the sport of the world. There's no doubt about that. It's the most popular sport in the world. And that by securing a top-notch team in Portland, that'll take us one step closer to serious, you know, world-class cityhood. Now, this is what economists call a positive externality. And, you know, in a weird way, as sort of abstract and vague as that is, like, how do you know a world-class city when you see it? And, you know, is Columbus, therefore, a world-class city because they have a Major League Soccer team? You know, those are questions you might ask. But, you know, as vague and abstract as it is, that might just be one of the best arguments that they have, is that people are going to feel good, perhaps, just like people benefit from the Blazers. Even if you don't go to a Blazer game, you can read in the paper about how well the team's doing, and you can sort of have this positive feeling about your city because Brandon Roy's doing so well, and all on and on. And so, you know, but that's difficult to measure. And, you know, it infuriates economists. They don't really know what to do with that kind of stuff. Yeah, it kind of makes me feel good. It's a positive externality, but how do you measure it? You know, one thing that I think this, and folding back to like how we can creatively deal with this in a way that's productive and forward moving, how about this? You know, I mentioned before the idea of profit sharing with the Paulsons. If the city is going to kick in and the state is going to kick in roughly half of the funds, mm-hmm. We should get a profit out of it. And how about with that profit, we set aside a special fund that gets to deal with many of the issues that are out there that we need to deal with, what one of your previous callers called the people issues. So the profits go into a special fund that the city council oversees, and that Portlanders decide what the money's going to go to, whether it's to help improve the situation of homelessness in Portland, whether it's to improve the public transportation system, whether it's to go into after-school programs for kids in public schools in Portland. Have this special fund set aside that benefits more people than just the soccer fans, of which I guess I happen to be one, but it should benefit more people that don't just happen to be soccer fans. And this is a creative, positive-looking, you know, forward-looking mm-hmm. way mm-hmm. of doing this, that actually, if you want to talk about creating a world-class city and the positive feelings that can happen based on having a professional sports team in your city, think about how positive people would feel about it if they knew that every time they went to a game, a portion of their ticket fee would go to funding after-school programs for kids. I mean, it would amplify this notion of the positive externality. It would amplify the good feelings, which is probably one of the Paulson's best arguments for bringing Major League Soccer to Portland.
Well, I do like that idea, and we do have a couple callers. Good morning.
Hello.
Good morning.
Yeah, soccer specific. Now, what is that? Does that mean that the facility would not be used in the off season for any purpose whatsoever? That was the plan of a Major League Baseball push here some years ago, that they would build a Major League stadium and that thing would just sit there like a big tanker adrift in the ocean during the off season. Could this soccer specific thing be used for concerts or anything like that? Even say, excuse me, when the team was out of town or during the off season, I'll listen off the air. Thanks.
Jules, you want to field that question?
Sure, you bet. That's a great question. I mean, are we just creating this huge dinosaur that's only going to sit there for like 15 home games during the regular season and then otherwise sit there quiet and dormant? And from what I've heard from people involved in the process, is that it will be used for things like the caller mentioned, concerts. But you take away the baseball possibility, which a previous caller mentioned is a serious source of income, especially when you bring in, you know, teams up from U of O and OSU. And so you're definitely getting rid of that option and shifting it across the river over to Memorial Coliseum. But you will still have the possibility of making income from other things. Also, you know, they're going to work out a deal with Portland State University to have events there, and that's part of the reason why I believe Portland State is actually supporting the whole deal. And so it won't just be the 15, 16, or whatever it would be, home games for Major League Soccer. There will be other events in there. But it won't be all those Beavers games. I mean, that's a lot of games, actually, over time.
Let's talk about the profit margin for just one second. I did a little bit of math, and if 18,000 tickets were sold at every game, and I believe there's 15 games in the season, that's roughly $411,677. Now, recall, our debt mm-hmm. is tremendous, and we need roughly like between $4.4 and $6.2 million every year the city, that's our amount. So the Paulsons, and I'm not talking, and this doesn't count for parking or food sales, and I'm not really sure where the food sales fits in here, if that's the city or Paulson, T-shirts, et cetera. But let's say there's a $500,000 profit every year. That just doesn't seem to pencil out. And once again, I'm not against the soccer, against Major League Soccer coming here. I just don't understand. Other places have outfitted their stadiums and had movable seats so they could add seats or change the dimension of the seating. It would be much more amenable to me if we didn't have this huge bill. So, you know, $500,000, and I just can't imagine that Henry Paulson and his son Merritt are going to be willing to share any profits, because that's really not a lot of profits for them.
That's right. And in fact, the most optimistic projections are that we will not see profits for the Portland Timbers until the year 2015. And so, you know, that's a good point to bring up. I mean, it's not like, you know, this idea of profit sharing is some kind of panacea. All I'm saying with this is, if it's ever going to happen, a profit sharing agreement, that it has to be written into the agreement now. You think the Paulsons are going to agree down the road, once the deal's set in stone, to say, oh yeah, now we'll start sharing profits with you? The point is, though, that they probably can start rolling profits in 2015. There's all sorts of other income streams, and we need to do the kind of math that you're doing right there, but also in terms of sponsorships from corporate sponsors and other sponsors, and these things that really mean just as much for sports as ticket sales. And so ultimately, if they do start to make the profit, then that's when we should get, I mean, we being the city of Portland and taxpayers, I happen to be one of them, we should get our fair share commensurate with what we put in. But you're right. I mean, it's not a for-sure deal in this economy. They're going to make profits. But some sports economists have said that they should probably be able to make profits by 2015. I want to say another point that's really important that sometimes gets lost in this. Is a couple of them, really. One is that you hear boosters of bringing Major League Soccer and having taxpayers pay for it. You hear boosters saying things like, it's going to improve the economy in the area. And there's just no economic evidence carried out by independent sports economists to support this. In fact...
And can I put you on hold for just 1 minute? Because I did want to get to that study. But just 1 minute. You're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM. It is 8:47, almost 8:48 in the morning. And coming up this morning on KBOO, at 9 o'clock, host Per Fagerin speaks with Kevin Phillips about his updated edition of Bad Money, Reckless Finance, Failed Politics, and the Global Crisis of American Capitalism. Sounds a little bit like soccer, doesn't it? At 10, hear Air Cascadia headlines and interviews and commentary with Chris Andre and Liam Delta. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, analysis of President Obama's new weapons projects, the untold story of the Iraqi resistance, and the significance of the U.S. indictment of a Cuban exile for the bombing of a Cuban airliner and other acts. And finally, at 11:30, Southwest Kuntzer speaks with John Law. I'm sorry, I can't read that this morning. Not enough coffee. Speaks with John Law, co-founder of Burning Man, and one of the legends of San Francisco's underground art scene. His new book is Space Between, a collection of three stories inspired by his lifelong obsession with bridges. And we are talking about soccer this morning with Jules Boykoff. The number to call is 503-231-8187 if you'd like to join the conversation. And Jules, before we get to that study, Ralph has a question for us. Good morning, Ralph. Welcome to Positively Revolting Talk.
Good morning. You know, this thing is just wrong on so many levels. I don't even know where to go, but let me just give a few points here. One, earlier in the week, you had a lecture on KBOO of Richard Wolff, and he really outlined where America's going, and it's going right down the toilet. We are up to our neck in credit issues because the wages of Americans have been flat for 30 years. The city does not have money. We cannot keep borrowing money. I mean, this whole idea that we're going to somehow come out of this economic issue and things are just going to keep going like they've been going, we're in a new paradigm now. It's time to get simple. It's time to come up with solutions that do not put us into further debt, and certainly not into some sort of a city trying to give credit to some private individual so that person can make a profit. I mean, that's just insane. And it's time for people to wake up. They talk about making this a world-class city. I think they're getting closer to making us a third-world city.
Agreed. Jules?
Well, I mean, you know, I would just kind of want to return to this notion of the sports economist. I mean, I think that your caller taps into a bigger picture that we all should be thinking about, I think, and thinking about how this fits in with how capitalism's going and how it's not going, actually. So I think we do ourselves a big favor to see how it fits in with there. And that's kind of what I'm arguing with. You know, we need to have a post-economic meltdown mentality here. And, you know, part of your caller's, Ralph's post-economic meltdown mentality means simplicity and not even touching projects like this. Other people's, you know, would say, other people, including myself at this point, would say that if the city's going to do this, and it looks like all indications are that they're trying really hard to move forward with it, let's at least make a post-economic meltdown motion forward. And that is this, you know, making the so-called public-private partnership actually function positively for the public, which is to say the taxpayers. Because, you know, the old public-private partnership model, as I said before, is all about privatizing the profits and socializing mm-hmm. the costs. And we need to move away from that based on exactly what Ralph's talking about. This is an opportunity for us to redefine what a public-private partnership is, where the public gets a much better deal out of it. But to return to the question of what sports economists are saying, because I think this is really important, because people that follow this issue will hear boosters of this program saying, hey, you know, this is going to actually float the city's economic boat. But like I said, there's no support from independent academic sports economists who will ever tell you that that's the case. In fact, recent studies have found it to be the very opposite, is that it actually has a negative effect on the overall economy of a city. And you can look at the work of, I have it right here in front of me, you can look at the work of Dennis Coates and Brad Humphreys, two sports economists who published widely on this topic, and they can tell you about this. Basically, though, the point to take away is that when they say it's going to float everyone's economic boat, sure, we're going to have some construction jobs in the short term as we create the stadium. There's no doubt that's going to happen. But a lot of these long-term jobs that they're talking about are either part-time or low-wage, and that's where, you know, this Jobs with Justice has a real opportunity before they endorse any kind of program moving forward on this. There has to be in place fair wage jobs for the workers who work in the stadium and who work around. Otherwise, they're just going to be working for low wages, and we're going to have, you know, an even worse situation in a lot of ways. So, you know, the sports economists will tell you that there's something called the substitution effect, and it's really very simple. Basically, sure, the businesses around the stadium, like right in that bandwidth around, say, PGE Park, they might experience an uptick in beer sales and food sales and whatnot in the short term. But what happens with the substitution effect is that those of us that come from other parts of town, like me, I come from Southeast Portland, it's not like I all of a sudden miraculously start making more money because the Portland Timbers come to town. I still have the same income. I just don't spend it at my local coffee shop in Brooklyn neighborhood. Instead, I spend it to buy, you know, a soft pretzel at the soccer match. So the substitution effect basically means that you know, there is no floating of the economic boat. It's just a shifting around of where the money is spent. So when you hear somebody making the argument in public that this is going to be good for the long-term development interests of Portland, you know, to ask them to see the study, the independent study, not the one that the Paulsons are paying people to carry out to, you know, looking forward perspective, but retrospective, looking back over real cases that have happened with stadium building. Ask them for that study that supports what they're saying, because as far as I know, it just doesn't exist.
Well, I'd like to go back to the point about the construction jobs, because they did cite that as a positive the city has. And once again, who's going to pay for those? That combined with that, I'm sorry, but I just think it's absolutely egregious that somebody who has a net worth of $700 million is coming to the state of Oregon and asking to divert income taxes, which is basically all that we operate on in this state, to pay off debt. And, you know, once again, the other point I wanted to make up is I love Portland the way it is. Yeah, you know, there could be a few improvements here and there, but basically Portland is Portland. We're never going to be Seattle, thank God, and we're never going to be Los Angeles because we don't want to be. So being a world-class venue or a world-class city also means other things. It means more people. It means more traffic. It means more smog. It means more crime. It's just not, hey, look, you know, we have a major soccer league. I just, and maybe I'm just not as involved in the sport as other people. And once again, I have to say I am a fan. I just it's just outrageous to say, okay, well, you know, these profits, once again, forget, we are $89 million is what it's going to cost. That does not, I've not extrapolated all the debt and all the interest. So really think about over, it will be 100 years before it's profitable really in the long run. And you can say, well, it's going to bring, or not you particularly, but the supporters can say, well, it's going to bring more hotel business or more restaurant business. But really, bottom line is, in my opinion, if they want to bring the soccer league here, I say we revamp PGE to the least amount. They can put a different, you know, they can put different turf down. They can bring in temporary seating and allow the Vikings to still play there and the Beavs to still play there and see how it goes. Why not see how it goes for 5 years and see if we really do have the fan base before we commit all of this money that we really need to be spending somewhere else?
Mm-hmm. Well, you're not alone. A lot of people are saying that. The question is, can you convince Major League Soccer to go along with that plan?
Well, some of the things I've been reading suggest that it's not, that Major League Soccer is requesting this, that they're not demanding. Now, who knows unless you absolutely actually speak to them about it. And I want to know, you know, and we only have about 3 minutes here, what you think. Do you think that if they said, hey, we're going to bring this team here and we're going to do a temporary, we're going to see how it works first, is that somehow going to be a problem for fans that they don't have a brand new shiny stadium?
Mm-hmm. If by they you mean the people in the city council and the ownership
No, fan base. I guess what I'm saying is, why do we need a new stadium when we probably if Major League Soccer said, you know what, okay, change the pitch, bring in some temporary, like I said, change the seating arrangement so it feels more soccer like.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and let's see what our fan base really is, because we really don't know if we're going to sell 18,000 tickets every game.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the best argument, if you're trying to make that argument to Major League Soccer, you wouldn't say like, hey, we'll see how it goes, and then maybe we'll ditch the team. You'd have to say, you know, look at the economic situation. We can't fund this. We
mm-hmm.
want to support Major
mm-hmm.
League Soccer, but you have to cut us a little bit of a deal for a little time frame where you might know yourself it's going to be a test period, but when you're talking to Major League Soccer, you'd want to make sure that, you know, you just, hey, it's the economy, which isn't a lie. I mean, look at the economic situation. You need to cut us a little bit of slack here in terms of the soccer-specific stadium. And I mean, I think that's a negotiation that should happen. I mean, you're pointing to yet another place where people can put pressure, exert pressure, you know, in democratic fashion, exerting pressure on people, even MLS, to say, hey, come on, can't you cut Portland a deal here?
Right. And I just want to let our listeners know that we did issue an invitation to Randy Leonard to be on this show. And if he decides to take us up on it, we would love to have him have a discussion. So maybe we can have some of these questions answered before April 22nd, before there's any sort of commitment. Now, it's my understanding, Jules, and I know you've been involved in this, that there's not going to be any signing on the dotted line until August 1st. Is that correct?
Right, and it might not even be till September 1st.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and you know, I would also add to this that, you know, if you can get Randy Leonard to come on the show, great. I've met with him personally about it. He's very forthcoming and fair, but, you know, he'll talk to you about it. He's got his opinions for sure, and he definitely wants to try to get this thing through. It'd be interesting to get him on the air and ask him why. But if you can ever get Mara Paulson mm-hmm. to be on the show, I would love to talk to him on air and ask him some questions about kind of how he sees things moving forward
mm-hmm.
and ask him, well, why doesn't he put the $5 million that he got the deal from MLS on the franchise fee toward some of this funding? And, you know, if he wants to be innovative, all right, let's talk on air about how we can be innovative. If you can get that to happen, I'd love to do that. I think that'd be very productive.
Excellent. And thank you very much. And once again, this has been Positively Revolting Talk. My guest this morning has been Jules Boykoff. And thank you very much. And we will see you next week.